have a good time. Put a smile on your face, yeah. KBKM and Elation Radio. Even brighten your day and help you through the night. Bring you good music. KBKM and Elation Radio. And here's your host.
Well, here we are again for another podcast. I want to thank you to our listeners for tuning into the Jotista Live podcast. I am Cynthia R. Bennett, your host, and as always, I want to take a second to thank the owner of Elations Radio, Kimmy Robinson. Here on the Jotista Live podcast, we talk about issues, stories, resources, events, and ways to eradicate abuse of all kinds in the community through education, edification, and encouragement. And before we go into the topic for tonight, I want to let our viewers know that we will have an upcoming event in July the 24th on a Saturday called the Dignity Drive, where we are asking for donations in the items of shower shoes, hand towels, face towels, shower gels, and diapers. And this is to help the community. Because of this initiative, I have had an outpouring of support from other agencies who will be out there. Fathers and sons will be out there. The diaper bank will be out there. Fit and Food will be out there. We will be having podcasts out there. ARCR, which is Assisted Recovery Centers of America, they will be out there as well with their van. We'll be providing mental services for mental health, substance abuse. These services, everything is free, the food, the toiletries, everything is free to the community. So I want you to go to our website at Jadasa, JADASA.org, and the flyer is on the home page. And I want you to take that flyer, I want you to share it to all of your family and your friends, because these services are free and they are to the community. And we want to see you there on July the 24th. It is from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and we are looking for you to come out because we want to talk with you. We want to share with you. We want to connect with you. Again, so I just want to talk about an issue that's, you know, that's dealing with, you know, it's kind of falling in line with even what we were talking about with the Dignity Drive. As far as reaching out to the community, public safety, how we are needing an increase in public safety as the decrease in funding for domestic violence services, for services that we provide to the community. Nonprofit organizations across the United States are receiving cuts. They are. In a lot of organizations. We're receiving cuts in federal grant funding. This funding is to help service people in need in our communities. And I'm not discrediting any other community, but I live in North County, and I know the funding and the services is great, and it is needed in the North County area. So, and whatever the grant money that our organizations receive, it is for a particular service. And so when you get that grant money, you have to make sure that the money is allocated to that service that you have applied for that grant and nothing else in order to stay in compliance. So I want our viewers to know that these cuts that they're talking about, and I'm going to give you the name of that funding, the cuts go into effect this September 30th. That's not far. And it's going to impact a lot of agencies, the ability to serve survivors, and even when there is already a shortage, not even just survivors, their families as well. All of the services that different organizations provide, they all fit together. For a victim of domestic violence, an organization may deal with that. They may also service human trafficking, child abuse, or sexual assaults in order to be protected. They need an array of services, while other agencies may provide other agencies. They may provide other services. And so executive directors across the nation have programs that provide different services. Again, one agency, or there may be a few agencies in one city that may deal with intervention, housing, training, while others may deal with supervised visitations for parents, food pantry, clothing, career building, et cetera. But all of these services provide support for families that's experiencing domestic violence, child and sexual abuse, neglect, things that the community that's plaguing our community today. All these services are needed. It's just not one service is needed over here, but everybody does something different, but it's all for the community. And some of these cuts that the agencies are going to be facing coming year is facing a decrease in funding up to 80%. 80%, people. 80%. That's a big chunk that's geared towards a particular service. these are all sort of different pieces of the pie. So, you know, if you take one piece out, it can leave that organization, it can leave that person, it can leave that community exposed and unprotected. Because we're already short as it is. And I'm going to give you some numbers. So, you know, this change in federal, why does this money is changing? I'm going to tell you or give you just like a brief little history about how we receive this money and why. How did we get this money? It doesn't just come out of thin air. They don't make it just for that. It says the decline in the money can be traced to changes in how the federal crimes have been adjudicated, which means, in other words, how federal crimes have been reported and how money is being allocated to that. Normally, when someone do a crime, that's they're fined and they have fees from the prosecutor. And when they get the fees, they're deposited into a fund that's created by that's called the Victims of Crime Act, which is called VOCA, Victims of Crime Act. The acronym is VOCA. And that money is known, again, as the VOCA funds, which makes up a large proportion of the budgets for nonprofits that work with survivors of domestic violence as well as other service providers. Because when we get that big chunk of money from VOCA, everybody that provides it and they're fined for something across the state, that money goes into that fund, and that's how the money is allocated out to different agencies to service their clients. So VOCA funding represents between 30-70% of the budget for most domestic violence services, most service providers. That is really significant. That is a significant number, and that is a significant budget across the board. If that's 70% of the budget, that means take $1,000 or 1,000 people. 700 people is going to be affected by that, 70%. That could shut some doors. That's why we have problems now with agencies in the community, because we don't have that funding. And funding cuts will hurt crime victims. It does. Why the decrease in funding? According to a policy specialist at the National Network to End Domestic Violence, it does hurt. Instead of setting cases, what they're doing now, and it's probably because of COVID, I don't know what it's because of, I didn't get further in that research, but instead of setting cases through to traditional trials, and it probably is because of COVID, because a lot of people were still not going into courts, they still are not allowing you to come in because of COVID and the pandemic and all of that nature. So instead of setting cases through traditional trials, many federal cases have been settled as deferred or non-prosecution agreements. So because they are not going through the traditional way, traditional trial, the defendants in those cases may still be required to pay fines and fees. But when they pay those fines and those fees, their payments don't go into the VOCA fund because they are not convicted of the crime. So when they become when they are convicted of a crime or a violation, that money would go into the VOCA funds because they're paying it. But because they're not doing this traditional trial, the money is not going in the funds. So which means if the money is not going, or their fees and their fines are not going into this VOCA fund, okay, the VOCA fund is not building up. So if it's not building up, you don't have that much money in this fund. If you don't have that much money in this fund, you don't have that much to shell out to the different domestic violence agencies. It's all a trickle-down effect. So declining VOCA funds is a national issue. There's going to be an increase in demand for services, no doubt. So not only are we not going to serve the population that we have been serving, we're also not going to have enough resources to serve folks escaping other cities seeking shelter or protection in these communities that we're servicing. And so here's some statistics from the MOCAD, which is the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, out the Missouri Coalition here. 79% of the agencies reported a VOCA grant allowed them to increase the number of employees. So it allowed them to have additional clinical capacity, allowing them to serve more people, allowing them to have more staff and shelters to provide these services, because if you don't have enough staff, you can't provide for the people. And if you don't have a certain number of ratio staff to people, then they won't allow those people to come, and then you have people who won't be serviced. 65% of the agencies reported a VOCA grant allowed them to add new positions. You know, they may need more positions that help, more research, more clinical, more people to help serve the food, more maintenance, whatever, more administrative work. So that VOCA grant allows for that, 65%. 71% of the agencies in Missouri reported a VOCA grant allowed them to add or expand their services. So, for example, with the VOCA grant funds, some were added the Deaf Crisis Hotline, where they have this this software where if a person is deaf, you know, of course they can't hear, but you can type in whatever it is, they can type in and you can, you know, talk, see what they're doing, or you can, you know, report whatever it is that they're reporting. So that VOCA grant helps agencies be able to service our clients, to service our community. But if the money is not there, you can't pay the people, you can't provide the food, you can't operate the agency, you can't, you know, it just affects so much. And that's because, what has happened, you know, nobody knew this pandemic was coming. Nobody knew about it, but this pandemic has affected so much that I don't think that people realize what we have to do. We have to do creative financing. We have to do creative fundraising. We have to do and I'm going to talk about some of those things, because I am pleading with the community as well, because that affects JADASA as well, because we're a nonprofit, we're in the community, and we are servicing the community. So it affects everybody. The service providers emphasize that even through VOCA funding, even though the VOCA funding has decreased, there are other funding sources that can fill the gap, and we know we can do other things and ensure that survivors have access to services. But the state, there is also state funding. And you know, we can always go back to fundraising events, which is what we're doing now. The event we're doing in July, that's not a fundraiser. That is, we are giving, providing resources to the community. But remember, when you give to a 501c3, such as JADASA, and yes, I am promoting the agency, because we give and we take that money and we help the community with servicing, all the things that we're doing. Your dollars are helping someone get safe. It's helping a child to understand about the dynamics of relationship. It's helping them with the training that we just did, develop a program, funding, feeding these young ladies and stuff. Your money is doing that. But however, you can write your contributions off with your taxes, because we are a 501c3. And so we are going to the community about resources. Yeah, new sources may come open. You know, we will find funding. However, we don't know how stringent they may be with their requirements, because, you know, everybody is kind of buckling down now. VOCA funding can serve clients in totality, which means it can deal with helping with housing, helping them with food, helping them with resources, helping them with, you know, clinical stuff. It's a totality where you can just deal with the client holistically, whereas any other funding that may replace it, it may have other requirements that may be tied to COVID. You know, it may have to be directly related to COVID, or it may be directly related to just children. There are some grants, if it's dealing with children and mental health, you have to be able to tie your program back to just children with mental health. You know, other things that can make it more difficult for agencies to spend the money in the same way or to utilize it broadly for all of the clients that's in need. And so there are grants out there, but they may become stringent. Now, we know losing this type of money, this chunk of funding in any year, not just because of COVID in a pandemic year, but losing this chunk of funding in any year will be detrimental to any agency. Any agency, it's going to cause a struggle. It's going to cause, it could cause a panic, because we still have to meet the need. The need does not go away because the money is not there. If anything, the need gets greater. But COVID-19 has also disrupted fundraising events to raise money to service our clients. And yes, we know we can do online events, and we have done, but you raise more money with live events because people are there to hear. They're there to share. They're there to be in this, you know, to feel the energy and to talk with survivors and stuff. It's just better. And so in addition to disrupting funding, the coronavirus pandemic has led more people to need these services even more. We started seeing an increase in demand for services of human trafficking survivors. While, you know, I'll get back with that, increase in domestic violence. I did a series when I talked about creative fundraising or creative servicing. I started this Jot Us Alive online platform during the pandemic, when everybody was in shelter and stay, when everybody had to stay in the house and you had the kids at home, both the parents, the grandmama, you know, whoever else was staying in the house, you had everybody in this house. And, of course, domestic violence cases skyrocketed because you had the abused and the abuser quarantining together. You got the kids are, you know, running around, the kids are bored, you know, they have to be at home. Then we had school at home, you had that stress. Then you had people, nobody was working, nobody knew if they was going to have jobs, you had that stress. Then you got all the people at home all day when everybody is normally at school and at work. You had all this stress building on top of that. So that increased those domestic violence cases. So we came up with a creative way to still be able to deal with our clients and the community at large. We talked about quarantine with abuse. We talked about how you can, you know, things you can safe-proof the home, be safety, escape plans, who you can share and talk with, buzzwords. We got all of it on our website. I don't want to say it over the airways, but go to our website, jotusa.org, and you will see at the bottom where it says quarantine with abuse. It talks about all these different nuggets that help you to be safe while you're quarantining, or how to leave properly and safe. Because, you know, it's not how you leave, it's not when you leave, it's how you leave. So we don't want you to just leave and end up having issues and it being a very negative result or a response behind you leaving because you didn't leave right. We want you to leave right where you leave safe. And so we talk about all those things. And so since the pandemic, you know, that has happened, we've also, again, started seeing an increase in demands for services for human trafficking, you know. And while the popular images of human trafficking comes from a film, if everybody that's listened to my voice have not seen that movie called Taken, it's a very good movie. I like it. I've watched it several times with Liam Neeson. I like it. But, you know, we know that kind of human trafficking is prolific throughout the U.S. We know that that happens. But more often, human trafficking occurs between people who know each other. And, you know, and we knew that in the height of COVID, the ability for those who are trafficked or stalked And to be able to break free from that type of situation was lessened because guess what? You were there. You know, you were there. You were in the house. And so human trafficking is very much real, and it is happening in our community, and it is a money maker. It is. No matter what anybody say to you, it is. Human trafficking is one of the fastest growing illegal trades, right after illegal gun sales and drugs. But it's increasing because why? With a gun, you can only sell a gun once or maybe twice if you re-steal it or something. You can only sell drugs once because once it's consumed, you can't sell that drug. But you can sell a human being time and time again as long as that human is still alive. That's what makes it a booming, illegal trade. And a lot of people in high positions are in there. I'm not, you know, trying to point fingers, but it is what it is. Now, while everybody was at home sheltering in place, this illegal activity was not taking place. Why? Because everybody was at home. So now, if you notice, there's an increase in human trafficking. People are missing and just folks trying to snatch people off the street. If you listen to some of these stories, they are trying to make up lost revenue, if you will. Just like the local mom-and-pop store, just like the big business, just like the nonprofits. When everybody was sheltered in place, money was not moving. Money was not being generated. There was no sales going on. There was none of that. And that's the same with human trafficking. So organizations started spiking these crisis-oriented services, including calls where people were in need of shelter during the pandemic. You know, some shelters, they wasn't allowing people to come in. Now, they were opening up hotels at that particular time, but they weren't allowing people to come in because, you know, the COVID-19, you know, they wanted to make sure that you didn't come in, affect the people that was already there. It just changed a lot. But now we're seeing an increase across the states with these programs, all of these programs. And with these programs, with this increase, these services, these increase in because we had to stay in shelter in place, because we had to deal with all this stuff, COVID has brought many survivors back to trauma that they thought they had overcome. It has. They have been re-traumatized. And so now they're in further need of more services. Now, we know that sexual violence is a crime of power and control. But not having, now, we know that. They've gotten over that. But then now you re-traumatize because now you don't have the power to go out in the community or the control. You don't have the freedom to move around because it's been restricted. All of these things have caused individuals to be re-triggered. And now, therefore, they require more counseling services. And so now we have to try to find ways to still service not only new and incoming clients, but our existing clients who may have gone past and healed and went through and they're functioning, but now because of this pandemic and things have happened and came out this pandemic, they have been re-traumatized. Now, because they're reopening up things, everything that's being reopened is not good. I just want you to think because the community and because of society is reopening does not mean it's a positive thing across the board. So those of us fighting domestic violence, fighting about neglect, all these agencies, we argue that funding our services should be a part of investing in public safety because it is about the public. We are for the community, and we are about safety. Law enforcement can respond after violence happens, but preventing an ongoing violence and trauma impacts not only nonprofits, domestic violence agencies. It's going to impact the law enforcement. It's going to affect the court system. It's going to affect a lot of things on multiple levels, such as housing security. Do you have a place to stay? Do you have a place to lay your head? Wages. Do you have a good paying job with benefits? Do you have a job that can take care of your basic needs? Safe neighborhoods or safer neighborhoods. that we don't have to always hear bullets flying. We don't have to hear people drag racing these cars and these three-wheelers and, you know, drive-bys and all, access to mental health services. Quality education, career training and development opportunities, all of these are determinants of public safety. And if we have a well-resourced service in all of these areas, that is what creates healthy communities at the end of the day. So I think it's very important for the agencies, the businesses, the communities, the schools, public safety, law enforcement, all to come together for an action plan. We don't need to come together and talk no more. Talk is cheap. We have talked each other till we're blue in the face. We need an action plan. Put it in action. Make the connection of why it's so important to have resources available and network with each other so that we can build our children, we can build our families, and we can build our communities. So before I leave you with this, I wanted to go back to a story in the Bible. There's a story in the Bible in St. Luke. It's about the Good Samaritan. And the story is of a parable that revolves around a man who was robbed by two men. And he was robbed, and he was severely beaten and bleeding and left on the side of the road. I'm paraphrasing it, but you can go read it for yourself. Left on the side of the road bleeding. Well, there were two men that passed them by. There was a priest and a Levite, and they crossed the street. They saw the man was bleeding and passed them by. But then there was this one man who saw him. He was wounded. He stopped to help him. He dressed his wounds. He carried him to an inn, a place where he can rest, and he paid for his services. He paid for the person that owned the inn to take care of him and said, when I come back, whatever he owes you, let me know and I'll pay. That was a good Samaritan. He took care of somebody who was in need. What is the moral of the story is that we need to put aside our differences and help those who are in need of help. The Samaritan in the Bible did not think about race or religion because of the man. He just saw somebody who was in need of help. So that's what we can do. We need to be good Samaritans. We need your help. Jonathan needs your help. Other organizations, we need your help because we have to start building up our communities. We live in these communities. We see what's going on in our communities. Let's do something, whatever you can, whatever small amount you can give financially. If you can come and volunteer and help, that is needed as well. You can offer your services. You can provide resources, whatever you can do. Community, be proactive, not reactive. We need proaction. We already know what's going on. We already know what the community is like, and we know what's needed. So what are the ways you can do to be a good Samaritan? You can create hygiene bags and give them out to homeless people when you see them on the side of the street. The homeless community is just growing astronomically due to the pandemic, due to people losing their jobs. They're on the streets. Create hygiene bags because that goes a long way, socks and stuff, deodorant and soap, because they already feel vulnerable because they don't have a place to stay, but then they don't want to have to go into establishments where they either ask for food or they even have money to buy food, and they're not feeling fresh. Things of that nature, stuff that we take for granted. We go and take a bath and a shower every day. We think nothing about that. But to somebody that's homeless, that makes a difference in their day. Go grocery shopping for an elderly neighbor. You know, I know they have these places where they, you know, pick the stuff up and they deliver it to you. But just go shopping. Be neighborly. At least let them know because I have seen, let me tell you, I'm glad I said that. And I'm going past my 30 minutes, but I knew I was today. I saw a lady last week. I went to the store, and this is what I'm saying, go grocery shopping for an elderly neighbor. This lady, apparently she had a problem, or she had an issue with her balance. I don't know if she had vertigo or whatever, but she was walking with her buggy, and she had a cane. And she had groceries and stuff. She had already come out to the grocery store and stuff. And I could tell something was not quite right. And it was almost like her legs was moving too fast for her. And all of a sudden she fell. And I said, ma'am, you okay? You okay? And she said, oh, I was just trying to, my legs was just, they gave way and stuff. And so I helped her up and I walked her to her car with the buggy. And I said, okay, where's your keys? I'm going to help you in the key. I said, do you have somebody you can call? You cannot get behind this car and drive. And so by that time she got to the car, she had fell again. So she stayed on the ground. She said, well, let me just sit here and rest. I said, okay. There's some other ladies that saw it and they came to help. So we were just talking and stuff, and I said, ma'am, is there somebody you can call? I said, let's get you in your car. So we other ladies helped me. We put our groceries in the car, and we opened the driver's side because she said she was going to call her niece and her grandson or somebody. And so we helped her in the car. She was in a truck, and we said, okay, turn the air on. You're waiting. It's hot out here. I said, we're going to wait with you. And so it was three or four of us ladies there. Now, this lady, I'm pretty sure she had to be in her late 60s, 70s, or whatever. And I said, okay, well, since you all are waiting for the grandson and the niece or whatever, granddaughter, I'm going to run in and get the items that I was running to get because I had the grandkids at home and stuff, whatever, and my husband. So when I came out, the car, truck was gone, and I asked the lady, oh, okay, they came and got us. So, and the lady was so upset. She said, oh, my God, they got out the car and cussed this grandmother out, talking about what she was doing, why I told you I was going to do it tomorrow, why you out here, what the E, you know, F, and all that stuff. I was like, what? The lady was so upset. I said, that's probably why she didn't want to call him in the first place, because she knew that this is the response she was going to get. And it was so, it was just so heart-wrenching to hear that, because if I had known that this woman was going to encounter, I would have just said, ma'am, can I just take you home or something? So I said that to say, you know, go grocery shopping for elderly people, because you don't know what their ailments are. Somebody should have went grocery shopping for her. So I just, that story just stuck out with me because it just happened, and I was really upset about it because I just hated that it ended that way. It ended that way because I'm pretty sure it did not end like that in the car. It probably was at home. Another way, stand up against bullying. That goes for women, men, children, you know. It's about bystander, be an effective bystander. That's something I'll talk about later, too. Tutor a student who is struggling. If you know somebody that's struggling, you're good in math, tutor them. Because that also deals with when they have low self-esteem issues, you know, that deals with, you know, low grades in school. They don't get low grades. I mean, they get low grades, and they don't feel like they're being heard or understood. They give up. It just trickles down to so many other areas. Become a mentor to someone. Sign up to be a big brother or big sister. Be a mentor because we need mentors. We need mentors like we need running water. We need mentors with these kids. They are our future, and we have to pump positivity in them. We have, yes, we have to, and I use that word delicately. We have to pump it in them because sometimes whatever they're going through, life has deflated them. They feel deflated, like the air has been sucked out of them because of life, because of things they're experiencing, some of the things they're seeing that they should not even have to deal with at their ages. So, yeah, pump positivity in them. Help a neighbor take care of their yard. You know, we have elderly people, and sometimes people, you know, if you know you can cut their yard or something, cut it. I'm leery about folks that, you know, I know they got to make money, but the way times are, just leery about people that's coming out of another neighborhood to come to your neighborhood to cut your grass, and they walking down the street with a lawnmower. You know, I'm just kind of leery about that. Sometimes maybe drop off bus passes or something. I mean, that's the good things that you can do to be a good Samaritan. It's about compassion. I talk about that. There's a difference between feeling sorry and having compassion. I said children have compassion. Children don't feel sorry. Jesus never felt sorry for anybody in the Bible. You will never find it in the Bible. It says Jesus had compassion. And the difference between feeling sorry for somebody and having compassion, compassion is doing something to make the situation better. Jesus is always making somebody's situation better. Feeling sorry is when you are helpless and there is nothing you can do. Children always, if you notice when you're upset, you're hurt, you're crying, you're down, and you have a little baby or a toddler next to you, they are trying to give you a hug. They try to, what's the matter? Whatever it is, they are showing compassion because what they're trying to do is make the situation better. And so I just want to talk about that today about the community. It's about the community and public safety. Public safety, we need to increase it. We can be a part of it. We can't just leave it up to law enforcement. There are so many other things that goes into public safety. And so that is one of the things we are doing on the Jotus of Life platform as far as the issues, the stories, the resources, the events, and the ways to eradicate abuse. And so we wanted to talk about that today. Again, please go to our website, jotus.org, see our upcoming event. We're asking you to provide resources, funds. We're asking you to volunteer to help if you want to assist those in need, to help us help the community. And so I want you always to remember that it is Jotus 24/7, 365 days, all day, every day. And with that being said, I want you to be safe, I want you to be well, and I want you to be whole. Good night.
Brothers and sisters in into the world to gather up his know.